Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Okay, we are back in the House of Mystery. I guess we are. You are.
We are.
It's David Nor'easter.
Nor'easter, yeah, that's the new...
What's going on down there? Did you lose power?
No, we didn't. But there was tons of snow.
Well,
but maybe not Canada snow, but
no.
it was enough.
Canada snow.
Canada snow.
We just take it adrift every once in a while. don't get too frightened there. But you don't. You make your wife shovel, don't you?
No, that's my job. Well, we do have some people, you know. We live in a condo complex in a townhouse, and so we do have some people who do some shoveling and stuff like that and plowing, but I still have to shovel up my car.
Oh.
Because we only have a one-car garage. So, you
know. Yeah, tough. It's tough.
No living. No mansion, you know. No mansion.
Well, don't tell anybody anyway. He really does. He's playing it down.
Yeah. Had to shovel up the plane.
Yeah, all that stuff. So before we get going, so Spotify, so I joined Spotify just to delete it. So we are on Spotify, but I took us off, okay? So anybody's listening, we are not on Spotify. How's that?
We're not.
I'm doing my part, okay?
Okay.
In support. Anyway, now, speaking of snow, okay, we've got... a Canadian on today, an author. He's written tons of books. He's a big time writer here. So let's welcome Mr. Mark Leslie to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Neil Young, like you, not on Spotify anymore. Since speaking of Canadians,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I got snow for you. Oh boy.
Oh yeah, you do.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Well. I've had very little, so I can't complain. It's been a mild year for me. Been cold a few times, but pretty mild. Not complaining, you know. That's up to Dave. He does all that.
Yeah, I'll do the complaining for you.
So what's been going on with Mark? What have you been doing? You've been hiding out. Do you like write a lot of books all year or through the winter?
Yeah, I write all year round. Well, I've been doing a lot more shoveling lately than I normally do. I do a lot less shoveling in the summertime, but shoveling and listening to audiobooks, which is a great excuse. But no, I've been working on more on the Canadian Werewolf series. I just released the latest in that series and continuing to work. I've got, I think I have three or four books in the works books right now that are going to be coming out in the next year. So, you know, just keeps me out of trouble, I guess, if I keep my fingers on the keyboard.
Well, it can. It depends on where you're on when you're in the.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it depends on what sites I'm browsing.
Yeah, it depends what's going on, because that's, you know, I've been staying out of trouble. I leave that up to Dave now. He's the guy that gets into trouble. You know. Well, when you're okay, so you got, this is book four, isn't it, or something like that?
Yeah, it's the fourth book in the Canadian Werewolf series, Fright Night's Big City. So I'm pretty stoked about it.
Now, so this is based in where? New York?
Yeah, it's primarily set in New York City. This is a Canadian, mild-mannered, weak pushover Canadian who happens to, he lives in, you know, one of the world's largest cities and happens to be cursed with lycanthropy. So I describe him as a beta human, but an alpha wolf. And he turns into a wolf for 10 days every month during the cycle of the full moon. And he has no human consciousness control of it. But when he's human, he does have extra powers. He has extra sensory powers, smell, taste, hearing that's really enhanced, and as well as superhuman strength. So he uses these powers that he has to help other people while he's a human.
But when he's a wolf, so he fits right into America then if he's a wolf.
Oh, yeah, pretty much, yeah. Especially when he goes to the buffets.
Yeah. So he just goes wild. It doesn't, you know, he doesn't have to be mild mannered. He's not like a mild mannered wolf.
No, but he is, I mean, what he does, because he's living in New York City, is he arranges to go and, you know, get himself to Central Park, for example, where he has a hidden change of clothes because he's tired of losing his clothes. Like, every time he changes into a wolf suit, he stashes them away somewhere in a hidden spot. Sometimes get picked up by, you know, homeless people and stuff like that who are looking for, you know, clothing to wear, et cetera. But, yeah, that's what he kind of does when he's planning his changes. But sometimes he doesn't always get there in time. And he also has no memory for about 15 minutes prior to and after the change. So that's kind of another little thing that happens to him to cause a little bit of frustration and hopefully humor that the reader tends to enjoy.
Well, what did you draw upon to make your werewolf character unique?
I drew from sort of a combination of factors. I drew from my love of the Spider-Man comics, so that's where he uses his powers to help other people. He realizes that he's got this ability, he should use them to help. And then I've just drawn on a whole plethora of werewolf lore. And I actually ended up finding, it's out of print, but I was able to find a used copy of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Werewolves, which is a really great guide to. He actually makes a joke about, yeah, there's no, you know, dummies for a werewolf book. So I had to figure this out on my own. Ironically, as I was writing that scene, I went, I wonder if there is a dummies for werewolves book. So I went and looked and there wasn't, but there was a Complete Idiot's Guide. And what I liked about that is it's a great overview of the different mythologies of werewolves from different societies, as well as in fiction, et cetera. So I drew a lot upon some of those to just kind of come up with, well, what are the rules in this magical world? What are the rules for how he changes and why he changes? And he even meets other wolves, including in this latest book, where the one wolf he encounters and interacts with actually has human consciousness as a wolf and can control the change in a better fashion. So he's not bound to just, oh no, when the moon's out, I turn. So he realizes that even amongst werewolf people, there are different ways by which the biological interaction happens with a different human. He just isn't able to control it.
So I noticed when you said, you know, hiding clothes and planning his change, he knows he's going to change and when he's going to change, like he has it all kind of figured out?
Well, in modern technology, thank goodness he has an app that tells him what the phase of the moon is going to be. He's, you know, so, I mean, he's been dealing with this for years before the first book happened. So, you know, he checks his app and if the moon is more than 80% full, in a phase, he knows he's going to turn. And occasionally it doesn't work. Occasionally it's like 81% and he doesn't turn. Or occasionally it turns when it's like 78 or whatever. So typically he prepares for it anytime the moon is going to be 75% or higher. So he actually plans these things out. So even when in the previous book, Fear and Longing in Los Angeles, when his agent is sending him to L.A., he's checking his app to go, okay, I leave for L.A. on this date and I come back this date. Oh, okay, I don't turn into a wolf anytime during that. So he's constantly having to check his calendar, which I thought, you know, there's a bit of humor in that when you realize what are the repercussions. You know, the very first story I wrote with him, he wakes up naked in Battery Park with a bullet hole in his leg and the taste of human blood in his mouth. And he says, what the hell did I do last night? Like, what did I do this time? Yeah. And part of the humor was he's completely naked. He's in Battery Park, way far away from Central Park where he started, where his clothes are. And he's got to figure out how he's going to get home without anyone seeing him naked. So, you know, he's trying to find whatever he can to wrap around himself. And he ends up bartering with some folks, like a bag lady, trying to barter with her to get some clothes out of the shopping cart that she has. And just some of those interactions, which have a bit of humor to them.
Wow. So, but if I remember now, so he doesn't really want to keep living this lifestyle, does he?
No. So the only woman, earlier on, the first woman he really truly fell in love with, he lied to her, because how do you tell someone, hey, I'm a wolf? So he ends up lying to her. And she thinks she's cheating on him, so they end up breaking up. Now, they end up becoming friends later on, but he realized that has been kind of mucking with his life, and he just wants to live a normal life. And so he has just met somebody who also has supernatural powers, but her supernatural powers are they reduce his senses. They reduce his ability to have extra human powers when he's with her. So she kind of nullifies those powers. So when he brings her back from Los Angeles to New York, the idea is, oh, my God, I can actually live a normal life so long as we're together. And that's sort of how the novel opens. Of course, the neo-Nazis they encountered in L.A. have decided to follow them back to New York and to turn New York back into Fear City. I'm not sure if you're familiar with what happened in the Fear City pamphlets that they passed out in the late 70s. But it was kind of like, that's when, you know, the New York of Charles Bronson, Death Wish, kind of New York.
Yeah.
These guys are trying to turn New York back into a Fear City and instill hatred and fear. And it's almost like the Purge meets Death Wish when you go out at night.
Well, thank God there aren't any real neo-Nazis in America.
Yeah, thank God, because it's all fictitious. They aren't for real.
Yeah.
but I did the neo-Nazis in this are based on, I read this great book called Hitler's Monsters, and it was about the actual, and werewolves were part of the mythology from the Nazi Germany, and they were experimenting with the occult to try to create super soldiers and things like that. So I used a lot of historic details about what this the Nazi agenda was in terms of creating a superior race, and apply that with a whole combination of black magic and occult, and made some stuff up in order to create this mythology that's sort of based on some stuff that happened and obviously extrapolated in a significant way.
Wow. So how do you fit into this? Writers always put themselves into these books and characters and stuff. So what's your angle on this? Who are you in this book? Are you Michael Andrews or are you?
I think I am in many ways, with the exception that I probably wouldn't do, one quarter of the brave things that he does. But looking at what would it be like to have this ability? Yeah, it comes from it. Michael Andrews is a writer. So I was like, I wonder where I got that idea from. He was like, it's a, no, it's a thing I know well. So it was kind of like, well, I don't have to research that so much. I know that. But I had to research some other things. And, you know, he lives at the Algonquin Hotel. Well, the Algonquin Hotel wasn't the first place I stayed at in my first visit to New York, but it was one of the first places I fell in love with when I first went to New York. And when I found out that it had this literary history, I thought, well, hey, great. He's he's now making it. He's now made it big. He can afford it, and he's got the Barrymore suite, you know, and he lives there at the Algonquin Hotel. And it's very convenient because he doesn't need to have a key or anything because the concierge knows him, right? Because he lives there. So when he shows up after a night of howling at the moon, doesn't have to have a key card on him. They'll just let him in because they know him. So there's a bunch of conveniences living in a place like that. That of course required research because I've never lived at the Algonquin. I've only stayed there as a guest.
Well, I'm just wondering, has Michael or any of your characters ever done anything unexpected or surprising while you were writing them?
Yeah. Actually, Michael surprises me every once in a while, but some of the characters caught me off guard. So, for example, in the novella Stowaway, which is sort of the second book in the series, he meets a teenager who is on the run from a human predator, and Michael ends up helping her. They're on a train bound for Stowe, Vermont, which is where the title comes from. And she was meant to just be a temporary distraction to keep him, occupied and kind of missing a stop on the train, that kind of thing, because he's trying to protect her. And the minute she opened her mouth and spoke to him, I fell in love with this character. She was a really cool kid. She was precocious and intelligent and a huge, huge reader. And suddenly she's like, oh, my God, Michael Andrews, I know you. I love your books. And so suddenly... they have this really cool dynamic conversation, and it's this back and forth between this, it's almost like a father-daughter kind of relationship, and then she ends up becoming a mentor to him just as much. And I fell in love with Bridget, or Bridge, as he calls her. And I realized she wasn't just going to be one or two scenes. She was going to kind of take over that entire plot, and that's happened. A few of the characters that I thought might be walk-ons ended up returning. Mac, Michael's agent, Mac the Knife Halpin, is a crude, obnoxious kind of, almost like a J. Jonah Jameson, if I'm going to go back to the Spider-Man mythology. Kind of like that crude, bossy character who is just absolutely mocks Michael at every step of the way, makes fun of him, but is gruff, and he's quite a jerk, but he never steers him wrong. Like, he actually gets him all the good gigs. He's gotten him Hollywood deals. He gets him into all kinds of things, and he pushes him in a way that Michael's not comfortable with, but realizes it's actually better for him. And people love Mac. They love the scenes where Mac is just really crass and mocks Michael. In many ways. So I have a lot of fun writing Mac because I have no idea what's going to come out of his mouth until he says it half the time.
What people say about me.
It's true.
It's true. Maybe I'm in the book and I didn't know it. I don't know. So this is, how long are you going to keep a series like this going? And is this something you've kind of already plotted out? You kind of know where you want to go, or is this totally per book as it happens?
You know what? I kind of don't know. I have some sort of high-level questions I've left unanswered that I need to answer in future books. But Fright Night's Big City was the only book that I kind of knew what the ending was going to be in advance. And I kind of knew that as I was finishing Fright Night, Fear and Longing in Los Angeles. But that's the only sort of story arc that I kind of knew the ending for. The rest of it, I'm a discovery writer. I prefer that term. It sounds a lot more eloquent than I write by the seat of my pants, right?
So, I'm going to copy that.
I'm a discovery writer. It's a lot. Yeah, look at that. But that is, I think... I like to put Michael in a situation and then just kind of set the wheels in motion and see what happens. And a couple things have come from that. Now, I am co-authoring the next novella in the series called Lover's Moon. And because Michael and Gail, his ex-girlfriend, because there's this sexual tension between them the whole time, there's this kind of like this, attraction that kind of keeps people compelled, as you often see on, popular TV shows and sitcoms. I had a lot of readers who said, I'd love to see when they first met. What was it like? How did they fall in love when they first met? What was that story? So I'm actually co-authoring that with a good friend of mine, Julie Strauss, who is a romance writer and a brilliant romance writer. And we'd been brainstorming going back, 10 years in time to write the Meet Cute of when, or Meet Cute, M-E-A-T, since it's a wolf story, but to write that story, Lover's Moon, and to give people a bit of a taste of what it was like when they were a couple. To satisfy those readers, because the tension of them not being a couple is a lot more interesting for the ongoing series. And as I was brainstorming this with Julie, and we still haven't, we haven't actually done more than write a little bit of the opening of that story. Julie came up with some ideas about Gail's past that I hadn't even considered, that I think will come into play in the next book, which is tentatively, I'm thinking about calling it Hex in the City. And it's going to involve more witchcraft and witches and stuff like that. So that should be an interesting one. But again, kind of playing that by ear, see where it takes me.
Well, what is your process for working with another writer?
Oh, well, I mean, I've co-authored nonfiction books on the paranormal, like Haunted Hospitals was one of the last ones that I did. And it's different when you do nonfiction because you're doing research. So you divide and conquer and say, okay, I'll do this hospital in this city and you do this hospital or whatever in this other. And then we kind of bring them together. But with Julie, it's different because I thought, okay, I'll try to write the story of them falling in love. And so I wrote the scene with Michael. And then in romance, you kind of toggle between male perspective, female perspective, or love interest to love interest, whatever you're writing. The problem I had, because I'm so much in Michael's head, because he is, based a lot on me, or an idealized version of me, I should say. But it was easy to get into Michael's head. When I started to write Gail's scene, I realized I had trouble finding faults with her, and characters have to have faults. Michael has a ton of faults, but because I know all my faults, but well, not even all of them, I bet I don't know half of them. But one of the problems I had is Michael puts Gail on a pedestal and worships her. And so do I as a writer. I worship Gail so much. But Julie was able to get into her head and to come up with some stuff for Gail to make her a lot more compelling of a character, especially to see something from her point of view. So we're doing alternating scenes. We have to map out and plot, which is something I typically don't do when I write on my own. So because we're co-authoring and doing alternating chapters, we do have to map it out. We have to plot it out. And then we have to kind of, play off of one another, because I may have a piece of dialogue that's told from his perspective, but then you see in the next chapter the same, crossover section of her perspective of the same conversation. So we'll have to do a lot of that collaboration along the way.
Just tell her you're a discovery writer.
Yeah, she knows that. but she plans things. She's, project manages things and does a really good job of keeping things organized. So we were just chatting this morning and we said, Julie, if you don't hate me by the end of this, if you're still my friend, wow, you're really powerful.
When you're doing research for this, I'd imagine you kind of have to go into the neo-Nazi world in order to get kind of how they would act or react or what they say and what they talk like and how they behave in their own areas or community. How did you go about doing that?
I read a lot of nonfiction articles from scientific journals as well. Even why we hate and how we hate. And obviously we've been a lot more of a divisive society in the last several years, especially. I did a lot of research on that, even researching, what do those people who are, white supremacists, what do they call this racial group and how do they refer to them? And that was hard. That was really difficult because I'm on sites, I'm looking up terms and I've got to be, and similarly, I was trying to figure out what the big nasty was that the bad guys were going to do. It's like, okay, are they going to bring down a building, kind of like 9/11 kind of stuff? Are they going to infect the water system? So I'm doing research on how to poison people in New York, how to bring down a massive skyscraper. If I'm not on some FBI or CIA watch list for all of the searches I've done and the neo-Nazi white supremacist stuff I've been searching, I'd be surprised.
Yeah. Well, were you just in a truck going across Canada or?
No, I was not part of that freedom convoy. Sorry, I can't say it properly.
Yeah, no, that's all right. You know, gee, because I find that's interesting. Do you think it affects your mind? But when you start to find out what these people think like and behave like, does that sort of get into you a little?
It's tough, but I think one of the things you have to do is. I haven't, in this series yet, I haven't gotten into the heads of the bad guys in a deep fashion. I have to understand them, but I haven't spent a lot of time writing that out. So I have to understand what motivates them. I have to understand where they're going, but I haven't had to kind of show the reader that because most of the story is told through Michael's perspective. So you're in his head. That being said, I am working on another backstory to one of the bad guys from one of the previous novels, and I'm writing it from his point of view. But you got to remember, when you think about villains, they don't see themselves as villains; they see themselves as the heroes. Therefore, their perspective is right. And so, having to put yourself in someone else's shoes, with the perspective that they are right, and the things I may personally believe in are the wrong things, that's hard. And it's that, whomever fights monsters, quote from the great philosopher. It's almost like whoever writes about monsters, be careful not to turn into one because you're just so ingrained in that way of thinking and in that world, just so you can properly understand what's driving and what's motivating the bad guys. So that's tough. If I'm spending most of it spent alone, like doing this, and then my partner comes home and trying to have a conversation, and I'm still in this weird mind frame where I've just killed a bunch of people. So that's kind of it's weird to come out of that. It always feels weird, especially when you write dark things and people doing bad things to one another. I often I get kind of a little bit self-conscious of how people may look at me. Of course, they don't have no idea what I just wrote until the book is published. Then they'll judge me, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how do you deal with that, with the darkness of the research, the darkness of writing certain things? Do you need to take a break, do anything to kind of like decompress or relax and recharge either in between chapters or in between books?
For me, it's musical earworms, dad jokes, Monty Python references, stuff like that. Just pushing myself out there. And oftentimes it's through social media where I just want to make people laugh. I just want to make people smile. That recharges me and cleans or purifies the air for me, cleans the slate.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Palate cleanser, if you will. That helps. I also think, it's a difficult thing to get yourself out of, but I've gotten used to, okay, I need to inflict emotion, and that's what I'm doing in the storytelling, right? Something funny is going to happen, and there is humor. There's a lot of humor in the book for an obvious reason, because I call it the whistling past the graveyard factor. So there's bad things happening. There's bad people doing things to people. And Michael himself, who, you know, like me, is a big giant chicken. How does he deal with the fact that he's terrified? He just doesn't know what to do next. He's not a hero. He just happens to have these powers. So a lot of his reaction is I guess I have no other choice but to laugh, because if I don't laugh, maybe I'll go insane.
Right. You know, another key part of this, you talk about him finding the perfect woman in this book, because she kind of neutralizes him, right?
Right.
How do you write into it a relationship that's, it will come across as real, will feel real? What are you drawing for that?
Well, I'm lucky. I'm lucky that I've known some really amazing people. I've had friends who've shared intimate tales and stories about good and bad things about their relationships. And I've been able to draw upon a composite of different experiences I've had or experiences that have been shared with me. And so I was able to take, so for example, the character of Lex or Alexandria, I've been able to take... I mean, she is a composite of probably at least a dozen different people that I've known, or even multiple relationships I've had. Even relationships where it hasn't been a boyfriend-girlfriend kind of relationship, because there's still elements of friendships you have with people that can be infused into a character. And so I get drawn inspiration from anyone and everyone. And so I'm pretty lucky that way. And that's a really fun thing to do, is to realize that this character isn't like Michael Andrews is not me. There's a lot of things based on me, but there's other things in Michael that, kind of got picked up over time. There's an exercise I learned from Brooklyn writer Dennis Hamill that says, go for a walk with your characters. And Michael even references this in the book, where you go for a walk, maybe it's a place you're familiar with, but pretend your character is walking beside you. What do they see? What do they comment on that would be different than the way you would see it? And that's a great way to understand the nuances and differences. So, for example, if Lex is walking on one side of me and Gail, Michael's longtime friend and ex-girlfriend, is walking on the other, what does Lex see that Gail doesn't see? What does Gail see that Lex doesn't see? What do they comment on? How do they react to seeing the exact same thing? And that helps me understand the nuances and difference in character. And it could be just as simple as maybe they agree on something, but how do they communicate that? What words do they use that are going to be different, even though they're on the same page, for example?
Well, so when you're walking down there, do you pretend to be a werewolf too and take off your clothes?
Oh yeah, and I bend between my legs and I have a good scratch and a lick, right?
And howl and all that stuff. And how many times
howl,
do you get arrested?
No, people, like, I get strange looks when I go for walks. I don't know why.
Well, hanging out in the park, well, you never know.
Exactly.
So do you kind of know what you want to do with Michael Andrews over the whole series? Like, do you kind of know where you want him to end up at the very end, like now?
No, I have no idea.
No idea.
But that's the joy. I mean, I want him to have adventures. I think one of the biggest challenges I had, so when I wrote A Canadian Werewolf in New York, it was meant to be a standalone. This is a day in the life of a guy who has living with this. And it ends, and it's kind of this open-ended ending. He's like, yay, you know, we defeated the bad guy, and everything's good, right? And then I thought, okay, I wanted to return. I wanted to explore more of what he would do, but I didn't want it to become, and I call this the Murder, She Wrote issue or problem, where every week in this small town of 2,000 people, there's a different murder, right? Like, it's impossible. Or even Marvel. I love Marvel Comics, and I love the movies as well, but really, that many superheroes just running around New York all the time? So I wanted to not, you know, there's years happened between adventures, because it's not like some superpowered bad guy's going to show up all the time. So I had to, there's a conceit with that bothers me in other things I've read. So I wanted to make it, no, this is a sort of normal world where some strange stuff happens. And so I had to deal with that. I wanted to have, that's one of the reasons I sent him to LA. I'm like, well, can't have everything come to New York. He's got to go somewhere else. He's got to explore things. We still don't know who he descends from in terms of the werewolf line. So there's this whole thing to explore. We still don't know. There's a guy who keeps showing up and saving his ass regularly. We don't know his backstory yet. And so there's a lot of stories like that I want to explore. But I have no idea what's going to happen to Michael, but I know that probably as time goes on, he's going to learn more and more about his own background, his own heritage, you know, his werewolf lineage, let's say, because he was bit by a werewolf, but he doesn't know who this werewolf is and has never encountered them again. So I've got to explore that, I think, give him some sort of understanding of it. And then I've got to realize that there's probably some longer term thing for him. But I don't know. Each book is sort of like a discovery of, okay, what's today's adventure?
Well, how do you decide, you know, which characters or which stories can become a series as opposed to just a standalone?
I think it's related to, and this is, again, another conceit or another challenge, is if every single time the world's going to end unless you, you know, stop them from pushing this button, that can only be interesting so many times in a row. There has to be something uniquely compelling about the bad thing that's going to happen, or what does the main character have to overcome? So one of the problems you have when you write a series is characters need to change and grow, right? That's a story, right? We want to see people grow. We want to see people change. We want to see what they've learned and what they've overcome. In a series, the overcoming is usually an external factor, and sometimes it's internal. So I have to kind of bridge the gap between Michael growing and learning in different ways as each new book unfolds, learning more about himself and growing as a character potentially. But then how is he going to overcome other things that he knows are problems, that he knows are, well, I really should be doing this, or I really need to do that. So I think that's one of the challenges is I have several other books I've written that are just standalones, and there is no book two yet. It seems to be, it's interesting. Often it comes from readers who ask a question. Like even Michael Andrews was initially, he was never named. It was a 10,000 word short story. And a good friend of mine read the story and he says, oh, this is great. What happens next? And I said, nothing. The story's over. And he kept bugging me. And I went, well, okay, I only did the first hour of his morning or 2 hours of his morning. I guess I could see what happens the rest of his day. And that's kind of where that let that cat out of the bag, I guess.
It must be really hard for a modern day werewolf to groom.
Oh, my God. It is so challenging. It really, really is.
I would think so. But, you know, who am I? I noticed that you've also written, you were just in that Halloween Harvest. What makes you decide to do something like that, like jump in with a group of other writers like that?
So that was good friends of mine, Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush, who run a small publishing company. They were looking for someone to edit a series, or they have a series of books, and they wanted to do some themes. So Chris was doing mystery and Christmas stories, mystery, and she wanted to do something along the theme of Halloween. And she's like, well, Mark, of course, because Mark's the horror guy, right? He loves Halloween. And so it was a combination of they needed someone who was passionate about that topic, and I looked at the project and loved working with them. So it was a combination of, okay, I get to work with Chris and Dean again as the series editors, and so I get to choose the stories, and I get to work with a group of, because the way these books are, they're workshopped with about 60 to 75 writers who can't get into the workshop unless they're at a certain level of writing. So I know that even if I don't use one of their stories, I'm still going to love it. I'm still going to enjoy it. It's not that the story wasn't good. It's just that I can only, you know, take 16 stories of the 80 stories that I've read. And they have to kind of work together. Because when you put a book together like that, an anthology, you're really just telling a story in a different way, or you're putting together these pieces to tell a long-term narrative from all these different voices. And so there's ups and downs. There's different themes you want to make sure you explore across the spectrum. You know, I want something touching and warm. I want something chilling and scary. I want something intriguing and open-ended where you kind of question. Those are the kinds of things. I think of it as like, you know, painting a picture. But what I'm doing is, instead of using colors that I'm picking, you know, with a paintbrush, I'm taking the textures from this amazing writing that these other writers have put together. And it's hard. It's soul-crushing work, because you have to say no to really, really good stories, because maybe it's too similar. Like, you've got two really, really great stories, and you're limited by word count because you have a budget of how much you're going to pay the writers. Or you can't have that. They're both set, for example, with this Halloween Harvest, I wanted to cover various rituals related to the fall and Halloween. So you had sort of like this Thanksgiving and harvest and Halloween, of course, obviously. But there's so many other fall rituals as well. And so I wanted it to be peppered with a whole bunch of different and different cultures too, how they approach the same methodology. So it's a wonderful experience, but oh my God, it's so emotionally exhausting.
Yeah, I'd imagine. You know, and the other things that the couple of books that catch my eye that you've done is the, of course, the Macabre, Montreal and Haunted Hospitals. And I wonder when you're writing books like that, how much the paranormal has influenced you and does in all of your books, probably somewhat, even the werewolf books. So what's your experience with the paranormal to make you kind of go that way?
Well, I've always been afraid of the monster under my bed. We don't have an under the bed, thank God, because no monsters can hide there. So that's good. That was on purpose. But no, I am. I'm afraid of the dark. I actually believe in the boogeyman. So I'm scared of the things I can't see in the dark. And so a lot of my curiosity and maybe it's therapy, but I am curious. I love to hear the stories. I love to wonder what if, because in a lot of cases it's, we don't know. We have no explanation, and that's what makes it intriguing. Now, I do, when I do share ghost stories and I do research, if I find, as I'm doing the research, that I can, you know, disprove or discredit the paranormal and go, well, no, there's a logical explanation, and it can be explained by this, I will share that with the reader, because I think that's part of the fun of ghost stories. Part of the fun is being able to figure out if we can, you know, see the trick, like see what it is that made us believe something. But it also is part of the fun is the not knowing. It's like, well, we can't explain it with this and we can't explain it by that. We don't know what it is. And that that is intriguing. So a lot of times I'm constantly reading about this stuff anyway. So, you know, again, I just do a little bit more in-depth reading, and suddenly I've got research for material for one of my nonfiction books, like, you know, Haunted Hospitals or Macabre Montreal. Or in other cases, they become fodder for short stories or fodder for something that's going to happen in, you know, one of my novels. Like, it could even just be a secondary background thing that, you know, happens in the background to Michael. Because Gail, of course, Gail works she runs an occult shop in New York City. And so, you know, she's going to encounter all kinds of weird things or weird people coming into her store. That could be something that ends up being a story that she shares.
Did you used to go and check out haunted places yourself?
I've been on tours and I've been with people who do that. I'm too scared to go and do it on my own. Again, because I am a big chicken. But yeah, I've gone and I love when I travel to a city. If I'm there for long enough to, you know, go and enjoy and do some sightseeing, I love to find if they have local ghost walk tours, because what a great way to learn about a local area and the history, like going on a ghost walk. It's a fun, engaging way of meeting people and just learning a little bit about it. So yeah, I really love whenever I get a chance, if there's a tour, especially of some haunted locale, I'm there, I'm in line, I'm signed up, I'm ready to go. Whether or not I end up writing about it, who cares? I enjoy the experience. And if I have material that I can use for a book, all the better.
Yeah, but what are you scared of? What's a ghost going to do to you?
No, that's the scary part, right? No, but I think it's yeah, the unknown, right? It's the unknown that's kind of scary. Like I'm watching, I think it's Archive 81 on Netflix right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's the thing. It's like, what is it? How is he able to communicate with this woman who died 25 years ago? You know, like, what is that? We don't know yet. We don't understand the connections. And that's the intrigue right there. So I think I love that sort of, I love that chill I get where you wonder, well, is there someone standing behind me?
You know? Of course there is right now.
Thank God it's daylight when we're recording this.
Well, that's what you think. It's not really daylight. Oh, and what do you got planned next? What comes out after this? Now that this is out, what are you doing now?
So I've got Lover's Moon that I'm working on. I've actually got a nonfiction book for authors called Accounting for Authors. That's scary. I'm working on that with a CPA, not a CPA, an MBA. Just to help authors with the business of writing and publishing. But here's a project you might get a kick of, because we started off chatting Canadian, is I am putting together a book that's coming out around American Thanksgiving, and it's going to be called The Canadian Mounted. And I have to ask you, gentlemen, are you familiar with the movie Trains, Planes, and Automobiles?
Yes.
Yes.
So the scene where Del Griffith, John Candy, is in the airport in New York when Neil Page first gets there and they first actually kind of see each other face to face. Yeah. There's this paperback. It's a what we used to call in the book industry a one-hander, an erotic novel called The Canadian Mounted that John Candy is holding in front of his face. Now, it's obviously the prop people were having fun because John Candy was a Canadian actor. And I thought that was cute because I always pay attention to books, and I realized that it's a prop book. It doesn't exist. In Deadpool 2, Ryan Reynolds, Canadian, and also a huge John Candy fan, in the movie Deadpool 2, there's a joke where he's like, oh, I'm going to be in the bathroom. And you know what he's going to be doing in the bathroom. And he has a copy of The Canadian Mounted in his hand. It's a mocked up version of it. So I couldn't let this go. And I've been thinking about this for years. So I was going to do an anthology called The Canadian Mounted and ask Canadians to write a story called The Canadian Mounted, but it could not be erotica. And I was going to collect them all and put them in a book. And at the end of the book, I was going to have a trivia bit that explains that it's based on this book that I saw in a movie, and I'm a huge fan, and here's some trivia about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I started working on the trivia, and I got so much information and so many cool stories about this movie that I abandoned the anthology, and I've just got it, and it's up for pre-order now. It's called The Canadian Mounted. I had my cover designer design it to look just like the one that John Candy's holding, and it's going to be a trivia guide to the movie. So that's a project I'm really excited about because of the cheeky sort of the wink, wink, nudge, nudge factor of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like you got a picture of Dave on the cover.
It's me.
I'm just going to say, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, in that blue bikini, right?
Yeah. That's what, yeah. Yeah. He's, yeah.
You figured it out. I was the model.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't. I thought you looked familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody, with the wig, of course, but, you know,
definitely
no one has, you know, those big of boobs as him, right? So, He loves his apple crisp. Oh, I'm terrible. Now, let's talk about where people can find you. How do you like to interact with people on social media or on website?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all the usual places. But you can find out anything you want to know about me and things you don't want to know about me over at markleslie.ca.
Well, that's you doing the TikTok thing.
Yeah, I'm having fun with it. TikTok, I do a morning shtick, hashtag morning coffee reflections, and I sit there at my desk with a coffee, different coffee mug usually, because I've got like 30 of them. And I share a really brief, either a 10-second, 30-second, real groaner of a dad joke. And instead of the mic drop, I take a sip of my coffee. Like, I lift the coffee. That's how you know that the punchline's come. So I deliver it, and then I smile and take a drink of my coffee. Oh. And that's been a lot of fun. I mean, tens of people around the world enjoy this every day.
Yeah. Well, what do you think of the new social media thing and how it's going? Like with TikTok and Snapchat and all these other things going on, are you a fan of it or is it just?
Yeah, I'm a fan because for me, I've always been a storyteller. Most of my stories come out in written form, come out in stories and articles and books. But between the highs of releasing a new book or releasing a new product, I can spend 2 minutes and record a short video and post it. And I'm entertaining people. I'm basically causing an emotional reaction. Typically on social media, it's humor. And I'm doing something silly or goofy, and I'm trying to just put a smile on someone's day. And to be quite honest, as a storyteller, that's all I need. I just need to have made a difference, given someone something to mostly on those social media. Mostly it's to smile or laugh, or maybe it's to be inspired in some cases. But for me, it's more of it's just part of being part of the community and sharing. And again, it's not like that I have hundreds of thousands of followers or anything like that, but I really enjoy the engagement. And when somebody actually puts the face slap emoji up as a response, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly the response I was hoping for.
Yeah, I think it's good. I try to do a lot of humor on mine. I think that it's good to try and make people laugh, especially with the world today, you know, way everything mm-hmm. going. So when you're sitting down to write these books, is that kind of the outcome, even on the werewolf books? What do you hope people get out of your books?
Well, I mean, entertainment, obviously, that it helps them pass 6 to 8 hours of pleasure and enjoyment. That maybe it makes them think. Maybe it inspires them. Maybe it makes them laugh. Maybe it scares them a little bit. Maybe it entertains them. I do want them to, I don't want them to put them down and go, okay. I want them to put the book down and go, wow, and have a character or something that happened in the book stick with them. And this happened to me once. A friend of mine, we weren't even friends, but it was a story I submitted to an anthology to Kevin J. Anderson, and he had rejected the story. But 8 years later, we're sitting down having a beer, and he mentions, he goes, you know that short story I rejected? He goes, I almost bought it for the anthology, and I remembered this about the story. So 8 years later, he remembered one small thing about a story wow. he didn't even buy. If somebody can read something of mine and something sticks with them, that it makes an impression, I think I've done something successful, at least for that one reader.
And is that kind of what you're looking for, too? Is that what you want to get out of writing?
Yeah. Well, I need to write I do have to write these stories, but ideally, you know, hopefully it helps someone. Maybe it takes them away. Maybe the story, the fictional story of a werewolf or whatever, takes them away from something that's bothering them and they just need an escape. Or maybe it just entertains them or inspires them. Maybe it inspires them to write something. Any of those things. I just want to put something out there that people are going to actually, you know, get some sort of benefit from or some sort of emotional reaction. That's kind of what I'm looking for.
And the publishing world, do you like the direction it's going in?
Well, I think publishing, I like to say, is more collaborative than it's ever been before. And publishing is expanding. And maybe traditional publishers may not necessarily be doing all these things, but indie authors are definitely taking advantage. One example, you know, I sell rights to a publisher. I self-publish as well. But I even have a book that I've sold the rights to a publisher. I've leveraged the same material that created the book from to use a GPS-enabled map, a voice map. and do a virtual walking tour, GPS walking tour of haunted downtown locations in Hamilton, meaning that I can leverage it. People can enjoy that as a book. They can enjoy it as an interactive experience on an app on their phone. Or potentially they see a talk that I do or a TikTok where, and sometimes, you know, especially around Halloween, I love to, I've been on sites where I've done live YouTube recordings. Hey, I'm at this haunted hospital that I mentioned in the book. Let me tell you a story about this, or let me tell you a story about this haunted bar. That's all part of it. I think that's all part of the fun and excitement I get from that sort of engagement.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I guess you'll probably, are you starting to get out more and do more? Are you planning on doing any book signings, or is that sort of still off the table right now?
Well, here in Ontario, not a lot of in-person events, but I am, next week, or probably the week that this comes out, I'm going to be in Colorado Springs at Superstars Writing Seminars, which is a bunch of professional writers sharing the business of writing and publishing. Now, one of my favorite things I'm going to be doing is, so Jonathan Mayberry, who's an amazing author, the Joe Ledger series and horror novels he's written, Jonathan and I are hosting a sort of a night of ghost stories where we're just going to be sitting around drinking cocktails in the lobby. And it's just going to be informal and people can just come and I'm going to sort of be interviewing him. But we're going to be sharing some really fun, true and fictional ghost stories just to hang out. So, yeah, that I'm looking forward to that because it's been a while since I've been able to hang out with other writers in person.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a strange time for sure, right? Makes things a little bit more difficult at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's always interesting talking to you. Time is up. So now the book we're talking about today is Fright Nights, Big City, Canadian Werewolf Book 4. And the author was our guest, Mark Leslie. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much. Always great to chat with you guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.